from the crypt.
Hello, boys and ghouls. Welcome to episode 117 of Dads from the Crypt. My name is Jason, and tonight I'm joined by Jody.
Hello.
And Mondo.
Hello.
Hello. And we're joined by our good friend Joe from Films at First Sight. Welcome back.
How's it going? Nice to be back. Thank you for having me.
Good. I was trying to remember, what episode were you on previously? I know it was a Tales episode.
Oh, something Cadaver?
Abracadabra. Okay. Good one.
That was it.
Stephen Hopkins. Good episode.
Yeah.
Well, we're happy to have you back. Tell us what's going on at Films at First Sight. And then for anyone that might not know, why don't you give us the elevator pitch?
So, Films at First Sight, we like to celebrate the first time viewings of films. We're kind of genre-less, so we'll cover anything. Documentaries, horror, like anything in between. We are busy. We're kind of in a mid relaunch. Just dropped the Swimmer episode. We have a big event coming up in January.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and
us. Yeah, very excited about that. So we're going to be hosting a film at the Colonial Theater in Phoenixville. Sunday, come on out to the theater and watch 19, I think it's like 47, if I'm not mistaken, Dead Passage. So old film noir. I've never seen it. Graham's never seen it. We're going to watch it with the entire audience and then pop right on up into a suite and do the show live.
That's cool.
Should be a lot of fun.
That's really cool. Nice. And that's the Colonial where they did do Blobfest and our friend Bob Trate works.
That's the very one. Yeah. The historic Colonial Theater.
Excellent. And do you have do you have any guests of note coming up on Films at First Sight?
So we just covered The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster. And earlier today, interviewed Bomani J. Story. And so look for both the episode coming out for the movie and the supplemental interview.
And that's the director?
Yes. Yeah, writer-director. Awesome. Yes. Amazing
very
guy.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah, I love that movie. I'm interested to hear that.
Yeah, very good movie.
Any other guests of note coming up on your show?
I feel like Jason is casting that fishing line out there.
No, he's sitting there. He's like the guy Top Gun, just trying to wave the plane in. And I'm right now goose out in the ocean.
I know.
Jason's gonna be on, and for something that really sucks shit, like me being able to read a tell, we're covering Sallow. So get ready to talk gross, disgusting stuff. I've never seen it. Graham's never seen it.
I was shocked that another one of you.
Once,
no, this is my first time. Yeah, I watched it like a week ago. And I messaged you. I'm like, I need to process this.
Yeah, just make sure while you're watching it, you have a big bowl of chocolate ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
It'll help you really get in the mood.
All that leftover Halloween chocolate, just snack on it the whole time. It'd be great.
I think you should do like a double feature for that one. Sallow and then like some John Waters, you know, just really mix in all the poop eating movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, there's definitely an unfortunate subgenre. And with Waters, you can go a couple of different movies, which
you got options. Take your pick.
I wonder if this is on, what is that? The old movie guide website. I wonder if Sales on there.
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, for that episode, we'll have to look it up. The movie guide, with the content warnings.
Oh yes, that sounds fun.
All right, we're going to be covering I think it's the oldest movie we've covered on the show so far. It came out in the U.S. The U.S. date, it says May 6, 1964. On IMDb, it still says came out in 1963, which I'm assuming is like Italian or maybe some other places in Europe distribution. But we are covering Black Sabbath. This was directed by Mario Bava. And I'm somewhat familiar with his works. I've seen videos about him before, but this is the first time I've actually sat down and watched one of his movies. But Joe, you said you would give us a little intro to Bava and his filmography and his influence. So take it away.
All right. Yeah. Bava is heralded at this point. He's one of those filmmakers that when you talk about, let's say like even like a Mount Rushmore of horror, he could be in that sort of discussion. He's also one of the artists that he did not like have those successes during his actual life. Most of his movies, he had a few movies that were financially, they did well. Others failed. But what people didn't anticipate was him creating multiple different genres and doing it in a way that would essentially echo throughout cinema. Myself, I love old fantasy movies. So if you're a fan of like the Hercules movies, Hercules in the Haunted World is up there with any of like the Ray Harryhausen, Jason and the Argonauts type movies. Then Bava comes in with Black Sunday and essentially tells one of the darkest, most gothic stories that was told at that time. And then we get further into the 60s and he's really kind of developing his style. When you hear people talk about Bava, you hear Bava lighting. It's a specific type of lighting, whether it's dark greens with some purples in the background to kind of create like a very unnatural ambiance to just dramatic flair. Blood and Black Lace, Whip in the Body. Even tonight's movie, it dives well into that sort of color palette that he is most well known for. He pushed the envelope.
We say he's like a forerunner for like giallo movies.
Yeah, and in fact, tonight's movie, the short in it, The Telephone, may actually be the birthplace of giallo as you know it in the 70s. Wow. There's a specific shot that is a black glove hand reaching into a drawer, and then it's pulling a knife out. You weren't seeing that before, and then that launched into Blood and Black Lace, which would be more known for the giallo tropes and qualities that would just placate all those sleazy people that love a good murder mystery.
And I'm also somewhat familiar with like Day of Blood and be kind of like a precursor to like some of the like Friday 13th style like kills and effects.
Absolutely. He took a larger setting, and especially with Bay of Blood being somewhat like the outdoor kind of campish setting, the influence into Friday the 13th is undeniable. It still has some of the giallo tendencies that would continue on, but there was almost like a meanness and less of a style and grandiose caricature to how the kills were conducted that the slasher genre kind of leapt off of. In between that and The Severed Arm, which came out right around the same time, you kind of had that veer off to the side for the people that didn't want plots that may not have made sense. And you kind of, with those proto-slashers, you're just getting people are in a location, and about every 15 minutes, somebody's dying.
I know in Bay of Blood specifically, at least one kill was directly ripped off in Friday the 13th, part two, I believe. The stab through the couple on top of each other, going through both of them at once with a big spear. Of course, you know, the director of Friday the 13th part two says, well, I've never heard of that movie, but he absolutely had. He stole that shot. It's okay. Just admit it.
All right. I think back then people didn't really, they wanted to be like the originators, right? Nowadays you're just giving homage and moving on from there.
Well, also, you know, you could have seen something on film, and then, you know, because you couldn't just rent stuff, especially if it was foreign, you could have seen it once, it was just stuck in the back of your brain, and then, you know, 10 years later, you come around like, oh, yeah. I need a cool kill. There's two people. So, I think it's less now where, like, you know, we have so much access to everything that we can, like, see things over and over again, but, yeah. All right, well, let's dive into it. Jody, give us some plot.
Okay, so I, you said that, you know, this is an episode of Dads from the Crypt, as always. It's also our first episode of Sexy Time with Accents, which is going to be a fun new show that we're doing, because this is Italian, and this is our first Italian movie that we've done. You know, Joe and I, when we do stuff together, we do Italian stuff all the time, but this is our first time as a collective enjoying some Italian stuff, so... That's good fun. Speaking of, real quick, though, did everyone watch the Italian version of this? Like, Italian language, English subs, or did you watch the English version?
So, I was reading about this, because, yeah, there's the Italian version, and they did another version where they, like, moved around the sequence, they cut out some stuff, and changed the music. The version I watched, I think, was on Tubi, and I think it was the Italian version, because everyone was speaking Italian, and it wasn't the right sequence. Yeah. But obviously it was, I think, I was trying to figure this out. Boris Karloff was overdubbed in Italian, or was he speaking English?
Yes.
That's my one like major complaint about that. Because I love Boris Karloff, and it was like, ugh.
It's the Italian style of everybody comes in, records all their parts in their own languages, and then everybody gets overdubbed. Because... Yep. Yay, Italy. I love it. It's one of my favorite things.
Yeah. I watch it. I have the old Mario Bava box set that came on DVD, who knows, 20 years ago now. So I watched it off that because I don't want to watch the commercials on Tubi.
Totally fair.
And nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong. Tubi's a great resource for a lot of cool horror. But if I don't have to watch commercials, I won't.
I agree.
I did have to get up and put a disc in, though, and that kind of sucked. But whatever.
Yeah, I started watching this in the English version. And so I got to hear Boris Karloff kind of do his intro. And then I realized, oh, wait, there's an Italian version. I looked around and realized Tubi had the Italian version. So I went there and watched that one, because not only did they reorder some stuff and add a few more little like goofy Karloff sequences in between things, they also cleaned it up and took out some of the sex and violence because American audiences. In the Italian version, it was made for adults. In America, they were putting it on the drive-ins, and they were playing to teenagers, and so they cleaned it up a little bit, removed some references, and so I would recommend, personally, you know, go watch the Italian version if you like a little sleaze and gore. If you want to hear Boris Karloff's voice, at least watch the intro, just because... The whole time I was watching that intro in the English version, I just kept thinking of the Grinch, because I grew up watching that Grinch a million times, and it's his voice narrating. And so it just felt like, you know, we're getting ready to watch the Grinch, but then.
And you said there's more Karloff in between the segments, right?
Yeah.
So I think I might watch the American version, just like put on the backgrounds.
Yeah.
While I'm doing other stuff. And every time Karloff, you know, shows up, pay attention, because I love Boris Karloff so much.
Between things are, they're fun and goofy. Like, there's one where he's talking, and it's before the introduction to telephone, and he's talking, and it turns out it's a little him, and it like zooms out, and there's a big him, and it's very, very funny, but very enjoyable.
All right, okay. Let's get into it.
I'm going to be talking Italian version, because that's the version I actually ended up watching all the way through. And our first story is the telephone, or il telefono, as it says in the credits there. All right, and part of this isn't in the English version, because Rosie is a French call girl. All those references removed in the English version. She is a call girl. She returns to her apartment one night, and she starts getting these strange phone calls. At first, they ring. She answers. Nobody's there. Ring again. The answer is nobody's there. Joe, you were talking about the influence of this on Giallo. Not only do we have black glove killers, we have clothes and opulence of Italy all over the place in here. She, you know, gets ready for bed and puts on this dressing gown that is big and elaborate with big sleeves and long. It's all of the stuff you expect in Giallo. There's style all over it. But eventually we find out that the person calling her is Frank. And Frank is her former pimp. And she is the one who helped put Frank in jail. And so she gets a note up underneath the door, and it says that Frank has escaped. And so she calls her friend, and once again, only in Italian, former lover, Mary, to come over to her house. They're estranged. They used to have a relationship, but now they're broken up. Mary the whole time is like, so why are you calling me? But she didn't have anyone else to call. And Mary says, okay, I'll come over. I'll help you out. Mary hangs up the phone. And then right after that, Frank calls back again. But we see that Frank has never actually been Frank. It's been Mary calling and disguising her voice. I mean, really just by wrapping a scarf around, which is apparently a very effective voice changer. She wrapped a scarf around the mouthpiece of the phone. And she, you know, threatens her and she's impersonating her. Mary arrives at Rosie's apartment, tries to calm her down. Because I forgot to mention, in the phone calls, Frank is describing like what Mary is doing at that moment. It's kind of a screen, you know, I like to know what I'm looking at or who I'm looking at type thing, where it's like she comes out in this towel dress. It's like a towel, but it has all these parts to it to drape over. And Frank is saying something about how much he loves her body and he can see her and she doesn't need to cover up, and just, you know, general creep stuff to keep her feeling unbalanced. So Mary comes over and she gives Rosie a sedative and some tea to help calm her down. And then she takes a big long knife with her black glove and puts it underneath the pillow, and Mary falls asleep. Rosie falls asleep. At this point, Mary, I guess, decides that, you know, it's time to come clean. And she writes a letter confessing that it's her the whole time. She's been the one behind all this. She just really wanted to see her and didn't have a good way to get to her. So she thought, why don't I threaten you by making you think you're going to die? And about the time she finished writing the letter, Frank comes in. And Frank takes some pantyhose. Is that what he gets there? He takes some pantyhose, wraps it around Mary's neck, and strangles her to death. At this point, Rosie wakes up from her sedative-induced sleep. And Frank sees her. He goes to attack her, but she takes the knife from under the pillow, stabs him, and he dies. And then we end on Rosie having a breakdown from all the horror she's experienced. So yeah, good stuff. It is right. Great. It's a great little segment.
Yeah.
All right, Joe, what did you think of this segment?
I love this segment if I watch the Italian version. The English version makes not a lick of sense because of how much they cut it up. They diminish the relationship between Rosie and Mary. You see Mary calling Rosie in the Italian version, and you're clued into who is actually the threatening menace, which lends itself to a different type of tension that in the English version, they have the same sort of music, but you have no sort of like waypoint as to why it's supposed to feel tense. Before that, it's just Mary is her confidant.
Let me ask this, because I think I watched the Italian version, but I didn't pick up that Rosie was a call girl.
It's what? Subtle.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I was like acclimating myself to the style or the subtitles.
Yeah, no, and she doesn't come out and like say, I just got done doing it with a client. You know, it's not that kind of thing. It's just more the implication there with Frank and
okay,
who he was and what he was doing. And she's the one who put him behind bars. So only way to do that would be in his employee and things like that.
He's referred to as her pimp.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know how I missed that, but okay.
I do know in the English version too of this scene, they make Frank a ghost. Like she holds a piece of paper and like the letter writes itself and like, I am Frank and I'm coming to kill you.
Yeah. It's completely nonsense. Different. Yep. It's so interesting. It's two different movies, but I'm a big fan of this segment. I think there's enough there for what lends itself to the future that I probably have a deeper heart for it than it just on paper, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I found this one, like, I liked it a lot, and I found it very Hitchcockian in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, I was actually expecting more supernatural right off the bat, and there's nothing in the end. There's nothing really supernatural, at least in the Spanish version or the Italian version. Supernatural. So I felt like this was very much like a Hitchcock, you know, kind of focusing on kind of the phone kind of thing. I was kind of hoping the phone would ring at the end or something like that to kind of tie it all back together. Like if it was like one of her like gentleman suitors calling, like one of my favorite things in that movie, in the movie Flesh, is at the very end when the guy from the very beginning texts her and says, "You up?" Like, that's just like a little part on that movie. So it's kind of hoping that that would come back in. But I thought, you know, the set was really cool. I love the music throughout this whole movie. I love the music. The lighting was cool. The set was cool. It was real tense. Like I said, I felt very Hitchcockian. Like, you know, there's a knife. You know, it's gonna come into play at some point. If there's a knife under the bed, you know, it's gonna come out. Mm-hmm. And I like that when she first calls Mary, Mary has like a huge attitude and like is very condescending to her. And I figured that was just because, you know, they broke off whatever friendship or whatever relationship they had. You know, I'm like, okay. But then when you find out she's the one behind that, like, okay, that makes even more sense. So it kind of gives you it kind of reevaluates that conversation. Mondo, yeah. What do you think?
I don't have much else to add, but I'm not going to lie. I watched this morning. I was hungover as all hell when I started watching it. And then I just got back from dinner. I'm not feeling amazing. But it's Mario Bava, and I love Mario Bava. And it's just, no matter what you think of his movie, sometimes it's fun just watching it and watching the cinematography and watching the shots he comes up with and just all these things. And like you guys mentioned earlier and Joe mentioned earlier, all these little pieces that have influenced so many modern horror films. So I'm a fan of this one. And the first sequence, like Joe mentioned too, the origin of the giallo is pretty cool to see with the gloved hand and the knife. But I can't add anything else in that you guys didn't already add in, but I'm a fan. Put it that way.
I do want to start answering my phone with pronto now. Because you're pronto. Hearing so many pronto, pronto, pronto. Pronto.
I mean, that sounds like some cultural appropriation, so but
hey, but before we started this episode, Jason said something about like being excited to hear accents. And so I started Googling, like, is it racist to do Italian accents in a goofy way?
If you have to Google it, then.
I'm looking to see what the general public thinks. And according to Reddit, it's fine. So I can play with these accents. It's fine. Reddit says it's okay.
Yeah, that's good to know, because when I'm trying to figure out if I should do something, I always consult Reddit first.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect.
I mean, there's worse places you can go on the internet, but it's still. All right, let's move on to the next one.
All right.
Real quick, did you guys notice the one line Mary said, I wonder if it influenced Raimi on Evil Dead 2? Because when she calls Rosie, she's like, even if you had an army with you, by dawn, you'll be dead. Ah. And so I'm wondering if that's where he ends up pulling the title for the sequel.
I mean,
it's not like it's like Dead by Dawn, you know what I'm saying? But.
Right, yeah. But I'm you know, all these big horror guys who we all grew up watching, I'm sure they grew up watching a lot of these guys. And so, you know, there has to be some of those influences creeping into everything here. All right, so our second segment is E Verdelak. Okay, so this is a Italian movie, Russian story, though. So I'm going to have Russian names in an Italian movie at this point. In 19th century Serbia, there is a man named Vladimir, who is a young nobleman, and he finds a corpse who has been beheaded with a dagger plunged into his heart. So he takes the blade and goes and finds shelter in this farmhouse. And in this farmhouse, he actually meets the people who live there, which I don't know about just going into some random house and hoping, you know, it's okay, but these people are cool. Like, they're super chill about this guy just showing up with a dagger in his hand.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out if it was like a lodge or some sort of like inn that he was like walking into. But no, yeah, it was someone's house.
This is their house.
And then he gets mad when they pull the gun on him.
Yeah. But anyway, he is approached by a man named Giorgio, who explains the knife belongs to his father, who has not been seen for 5 days. He offers the guy room, introduces him to the rest of his family, his wife Maria, their young son Ivan, and Giorgio's younger brother Pietro, and sister Sadanka. And so they all are waiting for Sadanka's father, Gorka, who has gone hunting for a Turkish bad guy who is actually a Verdalak. And the Verdalak is a vampire, except that they specifically feed on the blood of the people they love the most. So it's the vampire story, but much more familial, in that once you become a Verdalak, the people you kill are the people you love, which is a really dark, creepy twist on this story. Like, leave it to the Soviets to make the story even dark. At midnight, Gorka returns to the cottage, and this is Boris Karloff at this point. He looks absolutely terrifying. There's something about his appearance and his hair and the paleness and the lighting. This is 1963 Karloff, not Frankenstein Karloff, but even with 30 more years on there, he can still look absolutely just like a nightmare. Like, the idea of him looking in your window at night, it's scary. And he returns, he's got this, and when the family goes to sleep, Gorka attacks Pietro, and you see the, like, bites on his neck, and then flees the cottage with Ivan, who is the little boy, who's probably, what, like, 7 or so? Like, he's young, 6, 7, old enough to talk and be like, oh, grandpa's back, and be excited to see his grandpa, but young enough that he has no way of defending himself.
He could have been like 2, because they aged a lot quicker back then than we do now.
Hard living.
By the time you're 7, you're already smoking and drinking vodka. Yeah, it's a rough life.
2 wives, you know. Yeah.
But anyway, so he runs off with him, and they chase after him, but he only returns with Ivan's corpse. So they kill the little boy. And Giorgio's plans to stab Ivan in the heart, the way that he did with Pietro, to prevent him from becoming a Verdalak, but he's prevented from doing so by his wife. And so they go and just bury the son without stabbing him through the heart. And then that night, in one of the creepiest scenes, I mean, it's honestly super creepy scene, their child appears outside in the snow, coming up to the door, begging to be let in. Mama, mama, it's cold. Mama, let me in. Very much Salem's Lot, like scratching on the window type stuff, like that kind of nightmare sequence. And eventually the wife, she wants to let him in. Giorgio is saying no, but he gets stabbed by his wife so that she can get to the door to get to her baby. And when she opens the door, Gorka's actually there, and he bites her. Meanwhile, Vladimir, the guy from the beginning, has fallen for Sadanka, and they flee from the home and hide in the ruins of a deserted monastery. While Vladimir is asleep, Sadanka walks outside, and she finds Gorka and her entire family surrounding her there, all undead at this point, all Verdalaks. And when Vladimir awakens, he starts searching for Sadanka, and he can't find her anywhere, and eventually makes his way back to her home and finds her laying in bed there. She begs him to leave, but he refuses, saying he would rather die than lose her. There is a long scene of him just staring into her eyes with that kind of classic lighting. I think of Dracula. It's dark, except for her eyes are lit. And this long scene of them staring at each other. And when she and Vladimir embrace, she bites his neck while the rest of the family watches through the window. And I very much felt like at that point, he knew what he was getting into, and he was accepting it of, okay, to be with you, I'll become a vampire. I'll become a Verdalak. very, very atmospheric segment. Mm-hmm. You know, with Bava, whether we're doing a proto giallo or like a gothic vampire story or just a ghost story, everything is just, it's beautiful to look at. Every scene of this is awesome to look at, and I just, man, this was a fantastic segment. And that the stuff with the kid, the kid mm-hmm. outside begging to be let in, genuinely very creepy in a 1963 movie. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
All right, Mondo, start us off.
Yeah, even the this is my favorite segment, just to put it out there. And even the kind of the cool scene at the beginning, I love when you see the beginning with the knife and just the way when he's pulling the knife at the dead body, and it just stays on that scene for almost a little bit too long, but it's perfect. And again, just showcasing how great Mario Bava was. And then, like you mentioned, Jody, that's part I wanted to bring up is the kid walking through the snow. I thought was so well shot, so great, so creepy, especially for us all being, you know, parents. You always think in horror movies, like, how would I react to that? No, like, if I hear my child outside crying, I'm probably going to go open that fucking door and get bit. That's what I have to say. And then Boris Karloff, again, just looking amazing in this and chewing up scenery as only he can. So I think this is probably the strongest segment out of the three. And that's not a knock on the other segments. It's just how strong this one was.
All right, Joe.
I love this segment. It is everything gothic you want with like Italian horror. And Bava is leaning in so hard into how he shoots the village. Like the exterior shots are fucking wild. Mm-hmm. It shows how isolated they are. And he makes all of those decisions that you weren't getting back then that Jody alluded to. Like, yep, we're killing a kid. We're going to hold the rest of the family hostage via all sorts of other issues. And then they're giving you the greatest Karloff close-up ever, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, just like stunning. Yeah, it is just wonderful stuff. I'd say if you're going to watch anything, watch the English version because Karloff's voice is just so, it works so well as he's going through all of this. But yeah, that is, it's a good one.
I don't think this one received the kind of edits. I think the telephone one was the one that got the most edits in it.
Yeah, I would love to see someone re-edit both of them like together. So like do the like edit in all of Karloff's voice into the Italian version, but don't change anything else and put his segments in there. I'd love to see that version. Like the best of the both
exactly.
worlds.
Exactly. Yeah. I think you need like those two and the Karloff extended I guess intros to each one.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. give me all of those, the English Warlock story and the Italian other two stories.
Yeah, because fucking Karloff is so good in this, so creepy. And like I love that he shows up and like he said that I'm not back by midnight on the fifth day, don't open the door for me. And of course, past midnight he shows up, but he's the grandfather, so they're not gonna leave him out there.
Yeah.
And he's even like, you know, he asked them like for some food or something like that. He's like, mm-hmm. you know, and he asked for something, I forget what it is. And they're like hesitant at first.
It was he wanted to hold his grandchild.
Yes, that's what it was.
And the mother's like,
and they're all like, "Oh, what do we do?" And he's like, "Well, I'm still the grandfather here, right?" he's still gaslighting them. They're like, he looks like a vampire, but he's been in the wild for 5 days, so me, he's just like really grody.
Well, and he shows up like as the clock is striking midnight, so it's kind of like, did he make it back before midnight? You know, what counts?
Yeah.
Like, I'm surprised they didn't, like, try to test him, like, get a mirror or something, or,
I don't know.
They try to give him, they try to give him some food, and he, like, says, because he's talking about how hungry he is. So they bring a plate of food, and he's like, I'm not hungry anymore. Such a great performance, and I did feel a little robbed when I didn't hear his voice coming out. Like, I didn't take away, but I it was a part of me that's like, oh. What's everything else is so good, and the voice acting is fine. There's nothing. I'm not knocking it per se, but it's Boris freaking Karloff. I mean, I want to hear that. So, Yeah.
You can't
replicate. Like you said, everything you said, like on technical level, this is amazing. Like the sets are so freaking cool. So it's just dripping with Gothic.
Yeah, I want to know. I want to know where, like, are these like soundstage type sets? Are they real locations? I don't know the background here, but like that monastery scene, so cool. Like this rotted, falling apart ruins of a monastery.
I feel like the village had like a very surreal, like soundstagey quality to it, but then I feel like the monastery looked more practical. But Joe, you look like you have a.
So all of it was shot 35 miles northeast, I believe, of Rome. Oh, wow. In a little village there, they like the Bavas enjoyed themselves so much that his son came back when he filmed Demons. Nice. So this and Demons are filmed in the same area. That's cool. Yes, it's half soundstage and then half exteriors. But yeah, you also get Bava's Demons happening right there.
Very, too, very cool.
Amazing. Now, also, another thing, I'm just not very, outside of Karloff, obviously, I'm not familiar with any of these actors, but are any of them like known in other major genre pieces?
Yeah, Mark Damon was an American actor who really didn't get his footing over here, but became really well known in Italian cinema. Mm. He ended up kind of going the way of the producer route, and he's the executive producer of The Lost Boys.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Oh, all is the way he, up to he produced Willy's Wonderland. Like, he's still doing it.
Oh, really?
He's still doing it. He's that's still crazy. Working and still working in the horror.
He's a very handsome guy.
Yeah. He has a very good look about him. If you like Westerns, Requiescant is an amazing one where he plays just a slimy, like he's somehow paler than Karloff in this one, but isn't a vampire.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. No relation to Matt Damon?
No, I've wondered the same thing. No, but maybe if they buy a zoo together.
All right. Next, Jody.
All right. Our final segment is La Goccia d'Acqua, or The Drop of Water. And this is, I enjoyed this one a lot too. I'll go ahead and say that.
Yeah.
In the 1910s in London, a nurse is called by the maid of an elderly medium. So she's a psychic who spends her time talking to the dead. And she's died. And the nurse has been called to prepare her corpse for burial. So she dresses the body, and as she's dressing the body, she notices this sapphire ring on the finger. And so she steals it off and accidentally tips over a glass of water in the process, and it drips on the floor, and this big-ass fly lands on her hand. So it's just all these kind of like creepy things kind of in occurrence with her stealing that.
And not just from any corpse.
Yeah, from the craziest mask. Like, I read that Mario Bava's father actually is the one who made this mask, but it is a absolutely horrifying face. It's so cool.
It pierces your soul.
Yeah, I love it. I love this mask.
Like I recognize it like from other like clip shows and stuff of scariest moments. I'm like, yep, okay, I know.
And so then she goes home and takes the ring with her, and the fly returns from earlier, and it continues to pester her. The lights in her apartment go out, and then we hear water dripping in various locations throughout the house. And eventually, we see the medium's corpse lying in this woman's bed at her home, and it rises up. Well, first, it's before it comes after her, it's sitting in a rocking chair, just rocking with this horrible face. Then it rises up and kind of floats towards her, and reaches out to strangle her, and as she puts her hands to block the strangling, she puts her own hands around her neck and ends up strangling herself. And the next morning, someone discovers her body, calls the police, and they arrive, and they find only a little bruise on her left finger where that ring used to be. And in the background, you can hear some water dripping as that ring has been stolen back. This, to me, 100% classic ghost story. This is the kind of stuff I remember as a kid going to the school library and then playing like these tapes of like the golden arm, where, you know, they steal this golden arm and the ghost is, who's got my golden arm, and chases him, or the big toe, or, you know, all these stories where you've stolen something from a dead person and the dead person comes back for revenge. But with that Mario Bava style on it, it's a fantastic, just a short little ghost story, shortest of the three segments. But it's super effective. Mm-hmm. That mask is a lot of it, but it's that classic ghost story. Don't mess with mediums who are dead.
Now, my impression of the ending, because they show the neighbor talking to a police officer, and the police officer is saying what happened. And I guess the neighbor went to check on her. I forgot what she said. Mm-hmm. And she said, so she was the first one there, and then all the neighbors came, and then she kicked all of them out and waited for the police. And then my thought is that the neighbor stole the ring, because when they pull over the body, the ring is missing, and they kind of, you see her face, the nurse's face is now like kind of in a very similar stance as the medium's was, is now staring at her, the neighbor. So my take on was that the neighbor stole the ring from the body after she kicked everyone out and while waiting for the police. And now she is starting to be, you know, haunted. So it's very much like The Ring or It Follows kind of thing.
Right.
Did anyone else, am I making conjecture?
I definitely saw that too. I think it could go, it's one of those, I think you could be open either way, that either the ghost stole the ring back or the cycle was continuing as the lady stole the ring from the new corpse. Mm-hmm. And it just goes on and on with it. So yeah, I definitely can see where you're coming from there.
All right, Joe.
I love the idea that it doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is fun. It's a great ghost story. Again, you guys nailed it. Mask is amazing. I love a lot of the photography tricks that are done in this one. It reminds me of what you used to see on Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Mm, yeah.
That sort of suspense, but then would teeter totter in between supernatural.
Yeah, like that shot of where she's in the something about someone sitting in a rocking chair in the dark is just freaky to me. And then even worse, because she's there for 1 second, she does something, she looks back, and then she's gone, but the chair's still moving. Mm-hmm. That fucking gets me every time. That kind of thing, like that, and like the changeling.
Yeah, exactly. We had a friend's grandmother that we swore haunted the top of his house. Like, window was stacked up with books, but whenever his pants were gone, light was on, and you just saw a chair moving.
Oof.
I saw it once. It may have been the second time I smoked pot, but I felt haunted.
And I love, again, that each of these are just as long as they need to be. They're not like trying to match each other in length. They're all like, they know what their story is. They don't go any further, or they don't feel the need to rush anything. We'll get more wrapping up in a moment. But Mondo, do you have any thoughts about this one, Thad?
Another awesome segment too. And this is why I didn't get a chance to finish watching, but I've watched it previously. And it's just a rough night yesterday, and then not feeling great today, so it's, you know, been a busy week, so I'll say that much. I'm a big fan of this too, and like you guys all talked about, like, Bava can really do no wrong in these segments, so I got no Mark Twain shit to add to this.
All right, and then tell us about the closing, Jordy.
Yeah, it's an odd closing, but I loved it too. You have Boris Karloff riding a horse and saying, you know, like, this is the end of the movie, the end of our story, and hope you see me in your dreams. And then it pulls, and he's in his Gorka costume. And then it pulls back and shows that he's riding on like a little mechanical horse, and the set and the crew are all around, like moving plants. It's such a silly way to end it, but I loved it.
It's really the last thing next, because it looks fake as crap.
Oh yeah,
you know, in shot, but like, okay, that's what they did back then. And then they pull away, and you see everyone just kind of walking around in like a film set. And you're like, what's this? Is it trying to break the fourth wall, or is it like
we go wacky at like, the end?
Trying to comfort the audience. I'm a big Smashing Pumpkins fan, and I bought like their music video DVD when it came out, and there's A video for one of the songs. I think it's Ava Adore or something. It's one of the one.
I don't know the name
of which song it is, but there's one where it's like this, the like Billy Corgan and then all them. They're like in different scenes for different kinds of movies, but the camera pulls back on the dolly so you can see them running between sets and doing like these little vignettes. It's a really cool video, but yeah, it kind of reminded me of that. It's definitely the kind of thing Corgan would watch.
I like the peek behind the camera. And just to end a, you know, fairly serious, like this movie's pretty light on jokes other than the Karloff segments in the English version. But to end with this like wacky moment, it just, you know, leave with a smile. At least did for me.
Yeah, like, I love the ending of this. And that's the one thing I most vividly remember the first time I watched this. From the first time I watched it, you know, I think I rented it when I was in high school, was that freaking end scene, because it's just so much fun. And especially like you don't really expect it when you get that.
It felt very Crypt Keeper to me.
Oh, 100%. That was like, definitely a Crypt Keeper segment at the end.
Yeah, that's totally something I would see that you could see the Crypt Keeper doing. All right, and that's Black Sabbath. Let's do our segment MVP. Jody.
Oh, gosh. This is hard because all three segments are excellent. Like, I have no complaints about any of them. I think I'm going to have to go for the Verdelac, though, just because that gothic setting is so cool. And Karloff. It's close, though, because I love the ghost story, and I love the telephone one because all the giallo predecessor stuff that we see. But, man, you can't beat those sets and Karloff. It's just impossible for me. So that one wins, but it's almost a three-way tie, honestly.
All right, Mondo.
Yep, same one. Verdelac for, I love Karloff in it. I love the images, and this is that kid trudging the snow.
Gosh, the kid
gets me every time.
Yeah. Joe.
I'm going the telephone. Only because I got a ref for the giallo and the ladies in beautiful dresses.
And fancy towels.
I don't know if I can think of a anthology where I liked each one of them this much. The telephone is a great like mini thriller. The last one is just terrifying on the very visceral level. And, you know, even the Karloff factor is really what pushes Verdelac over the edge. But like everything around it, like I would have been happy to watch another half hour and just make that whole movie. So that gets it for me, because I think each one, the other ones, like, okay, they exactly need to do in and out, perfect timing. The other one was like, I could keep going on this and see what happens next, or I've seen more of the beginning. But this is
I love too that, you know, this is a vampire story, and as horror fans, we've seen a ton of vampire stories. Mm-hmm. But this one falls very much into the folk horror realm because it's not just a vampire story. It's a Slavic vampire story about a very specific kind of vampire that exists in that culture. And so that, to me, I think made it even more interesting. You know, it's not in Transylvania. This is in Serbia. And so it's just got a whole different feel because of that.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of when they do that. It's good.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we've seen vampires so many times, and for something to still come along and be this effective is really special.
Yeah.
Funny enough, if you read Stoker's description of Dracula when Harker first sees him, it is exactly like Boris Karloff. It is the mustache and the hair and the gaunt eyes and everything. It is not what we think of as that kind of
aristocratic.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Orlok visage.
Well, I would,
exactly.
Yeah. I would think if you spend your time running around hunting down humans, you're going to look a little more like a wild man than, you know, a count. Right. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on. Mondo, give us your song of the day.
Jason's pretty excited about this because he thinks I'm going to go 100% on the nose, but I'm not. I'm going to go on the nose, but I'm not going to use a song that that you wanted. You can tell everyone afterwards the song that you wanted to use if I wasn't going to be here. And if you just thought in your head what it's going to be, you're right. That's exactly what it is. There's actually a black metal band that came out in the early 2000s called Verduluk. And they're kind of a super group at the time featuring Maniac from Mayhem. I've talked about before, you know, one of the most famous black metal bands of all time. Iscaria from Immortal, another second wave black metal band. And then Killjoy from Necrophagia, who is a huge horror geek. Like, you get any of the bands he was in, Ravenous, Gorelord, obviously Necrophagia, tons of horror references throughout those. I mean, he did a whole album as Necrophagia called Divine Art of Torture, which is all about Coffin Joe, basically. I should say all about that, but he's Coffin Joe is the artwork for it. But he has a song on there called Parasite Eve. And this is kind of cool because this stuff was coming out before, like, really, like, now we have this robust horror community where if you hear any of this stuff, you can just Google it and there it is. This is kind of coming out before then. And I remember Necrophagia put out a VHS tape called Staring Through the Eyes of the Dead. Damn it. It's going to Through the Eyes of the Dead. I think I had that. I might have even sent that VHS tape to Jody. I don't know. But it was it's just these very like psychotic music videos influenced by, I think, Jim Van Beber. If you guys know who that is, he did like the Manson Family movie 10-12 years back. He was famous for a short called My Sweet Satan. Definitely wouldn't say, I'm not going to tell anyone to go out your way to watch it, what to watch that. But it's a, you know, old DIY shot on video horror. And but they had these crazy music videos, some of the most vile things I'd ever seen when I bought this cassette tape. And it kind of just helped me get further and further into horror. And it's one thing I do love about they've always had a love for the genre. And like I said, the metal and horror always go hand in hand, but this is one where it's really on the nose. So the first album that Verduluk did is Ceremony in Flames. I'm going to pick the first song off there because I just think it opens with a great riff into these great screeching vocals, and it's called At One with the Beast by Verduluk of Ceremony in Flames.
Nice.
Check it out.
Nice. Yeah. I know I can't match Mondo and his amazing choices, so I was going to go as on the nose as you could by picking Black Sabbath by Black Sabbath.
which I will go on record as saying has the greatest riff in the history of music.
Oh, that's a great
and
song.
I will not allow anyone to tell me I'm wrong because I'm not wrong.
Yeah. So I did a little bit of reading on this, and apparently Black Sabbath was, you know, they're more of like a hippie rock band called Earth before reforming as Black Sabbath. And apparently they did a show and there weren't a ton of people that showed up. And they were kind of leaving the show, and they saw next door there was a theater playing Black Sabbath. It was a huge line. Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh, well, that's so popular. Let's just crib that. And that's where they got their name from.
And famously, Tony Iommi lost his fingers in an accident at a factory, literally his last day on the job.
Oh, and then
and if you ever watch him, he plays with these little thimbles on his on his fingers. But that's kind of like where the power chord came from, because he couldn't do these crazy bar chords with his hand, so he kind of figured out this power chord, and he downtuned so his strings would be looser, and that created the iconic heavy metal sound. He's also one of the first guitar players. He approached, it was either Gibson or Fender, saying, hey, we should build an amplifier, because back then now you have combo amps. Back then you didn't have that. You had a speaker and an amplifier that plugged into the speaker, like we call now a head. And he was the first one to ever really go to a manufacturer and be like, hey, if you combine these two, it'll make life so much easier. And they're like, no one's going to want that dog shit. And here we are. That's 90% of the market. And if you even listen to those early Black Sabbath records, specifically the first two, Black Sabbath, self-titled, and Paranoid, there's a lot of times that they just kind of go off into jam band territory, but not in a shitty way like Primus. But in a, like, a, we know how to play. Well, Primus are fantastic musicians. I was about to mock their musicianship, but I can't do that. They're awesome musicians. But if you listen, Electric Funeral? It's one of my favorite songs of all time. Yeah. That song is the first half and the second half, and then it goes back into the first riff, but it's totally different. It goes like into this bluesy area, and you could definitely see where they wore their influences on their shoulders. And also not a satanic band. And that's the funny part is they got kind of thrown under the bus by the government groups trying to blame, you know, the destruction of children on rock and roll, and specifically Black Sabbath. And on the album Master of Reality, they have After Forever, which is a song about saying, like, you're an idiot if you don't believe in God, is literally what the song says. So they were never a satanic band. They should have been. They'd have been that much cooler. And legit, my favorite band of all time. I'll say fucking Black Sabbath is my favorite band of all time. I discovered Metallica first. But when I picked up this the Black Sabbath CD at the fucking gas station by my house one time, and I was walking, I was like 13, and I was taking a walk. And then when I put that in, I got home and listened to it. That's what made me want to pick up a guitar. Just that intro riff. I'm like, fuck, yes, this has to have has to be a thing.
Which album was it?
The original Black Sabbath, okay. And the song Black Sabbath.
Yeah, no, I think my first one was Paranoid, and I played that all like over and over and over again.
A wonderful album, and the funny story behind it is the song Paranoid was tacked on at the very end. As in, they basically said, you need to fill 3 more minutes. The studio wants you to. So you just went downstairs and wrote the song. They're like, yeah, we'll see what happens. And then turns out to be one of their most iconic hits.
Yeah, I love it when bands do that.
The one thing I hate about Paranoid is that on the song Paranoid, they put this stupid fucking effect over Tony Iommi's guitar. And it wasn't Iommi that did it. It was the producer that did it, which is why if you hear that solo, it's got this weird like fuzz to it. And it was 100% done by the producer. So, man, screw you, man. You had to ruin Iommi's solo. And to this day, the original recording of that doesn't exist. So that's the only version you can hear is with the solo. But I could talk about Black Sabbath for like forever. Fuck, dude.
See, I never have much to contribute to the metal stories, except for, in this case, my dad had a huge record collection when I was growing up. And I grew up like, you know, very conservative Christian, you know, very sheltered. I didn't get into horror movies till I was like 17. But he had this huge record collection, and digging through his records, he had Black Sabbath, the album, and Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath.
Nice.
And both of those covers, to my little, you know, sheltered conservative Christian life, were terrifying. They were really freaky stuff. And definitely, you know, little taste of horror in my life earlier on that eventually bloomed into whatever this is.
Did you ever listen to him at that age out of curiosity?
The record player was a protected item in our house because, you know, and by the mid 80s, you know, they weren't as common. You know, there was cassette tapes everywhere and then CDs. And so we treated his records with a reverence that he got the records out if we were going to listen to a record, and he put the records on. So I don't think he ever pulled out the Sabbath because, again, you know, conservative 80s. But it stuck with me. I looked up the covers just now, and immediately seeing the one for Black Sabbath, I'm like, oh, shit. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. They definitely leaned into that horror imagery on the album covers and somewhat on the lyrics. Like, there was such an anti-war band, which is also what's really funny. People say, you know, Children of the Grave, the whole song with that. Dun, 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 dun. The whole song is about like, hey, if we don't start like loving one another and stop trying to kill each other, we're going to be children of the grave. That was a whole idea behind it, was telling the future generations to not do the shit that we did and our grandparents did and our parents did. And we're still here. Yeah. We're still fucking here.
Yeah, War Pigs is another one like that.
Yeah, War Pigs. It's funny because War Pigs, I forgot what it was, like some warmonger politician was using that.
Yeah.
And I was like, did you listen to the lyrics? Obviously you didn't. You fucking idiot.
Hi, I'm running for Congress. I'm one of the generals gathered in our masses.
Like, which of that black masses?
Yeah. I mean, they are a bunch of evil minds of plot destruction, so.
That's right, that's right.
All right, Jody, give us some horror news.
Real fast. I'm very upset that no one finished the last line and we'd have gone through the whole verse, but it's okay.
I know. I was waiting for Joe to kick in, but I was like, I'm just going to roll it.
Just leave them wanting more. That's what I say. All right. As far as horror news, our recording schedule's been a little off, so it hasn't been that long since the last time I had horror news, so there's not a ton since then. But right now, as of about 2 hours ago, you can go watch the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror number 34. It came out today on November 5th. You'll be listening to this at least November 12th, so definitely out there for you. Go watch it. I hope last year's episode was one of the best Treehouse of Horrors, maybe of all time. It might be up there with The Shining for me as far as how good it is. you had a segment, the Pookadook, which is a Babadook parody, where Marge is actually pretty scary in that one. Like, it's, it leans into the horror of her wanting to kill Maggie. Like, that's the plot of it. Then they go for a Death Note episode that is drawn in anime style. Actually, cool. I think they won like an Emmy for it because the animation is so incredible. And then the last one is Simpsons World that references all of these old episodes of The Simpsons. It's incredible. It's one of the best Treehouse of Horror. The one that came out this year, though, Bart becomes an NFT is what I've seen. So I'm kind of worried that maybe it's not going to have that same kind of quality to it. But, you know, it's the Treehouse Horror. I'm going to watch it. Like, I'm going to watch it and I'll probably find something to like about it. But, man, 2022's Treehouse of Horror number 33. Go back and watch that one. They're all on Disney Plus.
It was that one that actually kind of got me back into The Simpsons because you recommended it. And I watched it and I started watching some new episodes. I'm like, oh, they're got some fun stuff again.
We're not hitting the heights of like the classic seasons, I don't think, but it's still good TV. It's good. Like, there are good episodes out there right now. So, yeah, if you quit watching The Simpsons in 1999, go back and watch some more. They might surprise you. All right. More horror news. Eli Roth's Thanksgiving has been rated R. Shockingly.
No kidding.
For strong, bloody horror, violence, and gore, and sexual material. So, sounds like an Eli Roth movie to me. I'm in. I've been wanting Thanksgiving since Grindhouse did that little trailer. When I watched the trailer for this one, I was looking for one thing, and that's the cheerleader on a trampoline with the knife going through the trampoline. And thankfully, that did show up in the new trailer, so I'm satisfied. If they cut that out, I knew that they had neutered this movie, but they didn't. So, much like what happens to that poor girl.
I'm really looking for that. We might have to do a mini review.
Yeah, no, I'm down for that.
Yeah, that'll be a day one watch for me.
Couple other things coming to streaming for too long. There's a movie called Late Night with the Devil that's been picked up by Shudder and IFC. It stars David Dastmalchian. Is that how you say his name? Do you know who I'm talking about? Polka Dot Man in Suicide Squad. He's kind of an odd dude, and I like the stuff he does because he makes interesting choices. But it's a 70s talk show that becomes infested by demons. And if from the screenshots or from the shots I've seen, it's got that, you know, like brown rainbowy stuff, like the dating game. And like it the sets look perfect. He's in a brown suit, all of the hair and it looks like a cool period piece from the 70s. Plus the idea of a late night show being attacked by demons sounds pretty interesting to me.
There are people who it released this year at South by Southwest. And I remember on Twitter, a bunch of people were raving about it, saying how great it was, how imaginative it was, and how it's criminal that there's really not even a trailer out for it.
Yeah.
It's just kind of gotten word of mouth.
The good news is, though, because it got picked up by Shudder, yeah, I'm going to assume it'll release on Shudder once it comes out.
Oh, for sure. They haven't given a date yet, have they?
No, they haven't.
Oh, okay.
And this one I brought up last episode, but I'm going to bring it up again because Joe's here, and I know he's going to be excited about it. If you have Screambox, Onyx the Fortuitous and the Talisman of Souls drops on November 14th, and you can watch it right there.
You'll see it.
Just like you could at Chattanooga Film Fest. But also on Screambox, you can watch Lena Quigley's Horror Workout, restored in HD for the first time ever. So that's a thing that exists.
A RoboDoc, the RoboCop documentary on there. Uh-huh. Fantastic. Like, Screambox is fucking killing it. I'm just going to say that.
Do they have their own app?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, that's actually... On
things, too. Like, Xbox has an app, Roku has an app, phones,
all that stuff.
How much is it a month? Because I feel like I need to jump on that bandwagon now.
$5.99?
I don't even think it's that.
You can get a whole year for $50 if you get a coupon.
Oh. Yeah. I think I paid for a year in advance around $50. I did, too.
Yeah, because, I mean, Shudder's good, but, you know, there's some good stuff going on over there.
And not a knock on Shudder. Yeah, there's weird stuff going on with AMC. And if you just kind of look at the releases Shudder's done last month versus this month, it's pretty sparse. Whereas before, I felt like we're getting a lot of new content. Right now, we've been getting kind of a, you know. And I still love Shudder. I'm not going to get rid of it. Like, I'll be, if something happens to it, I'll be grasping onto it with my, you know, bony white hands. But it's a, I don't know, it's a Saturday night. Jason.
But yeah, so, you know, Screambox, script like a lot that. Of good stuff coming out there soon. Late Night with the Devil coming to Shudder. I still say, and I've said this for a long time, we always talk about the 80s as like this horror's golden age. I think we're in the golden age right now, man. Like, there's new stuff being made all the time, and we have access to all the old stuff. It would have blown my mind as a teenager, first peeking around in horror and getting into everything, to have this kind of access. I remember the very first time I looked at Netflix when it was new and I first heard about it. The first thing I did was type in Dario Argento, because I had always heard about his movies on all the blogs I read, but had never seen one because they never came to my little video stores, and immediately just adding all the Argento stuff to my queue. But now I can watch any of it right now in, 30 seconds.
It's so crazy. You can just think of a movie like, man, I haven't seen that in forever. I'll just find it and it's streaming somewhere. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the access we have is nuts. I remember, again, being a kid and like you would only hear a song like on the radio, but like you'd have no way to Shazam it to figure out what song that was. You have to wait for the DJ to announce it, wait for them to play it again.
Well, I remember calling the radio station being like, what's that song?
Exactly. I remember like hearing Rush and like hearing what was the overture? Was it 2112?
2112, probably, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, I heard it so many times, I could not figure out who it was or what it was. When I finally nailed it down, I was so proud. But nowadays, you just flip out your phone or, good stuff.
And before we move on to our next segment, I just have to say, we made it through our entire Italian discussion, and I don't think I did anything to get me canceled with accents. So that's...
No, you definitely didn't.
That's good. I mean, first thing I sent Jason when he said something about it was, it's a me, Mario Bava, and I was going to use that at some point, but yeah, I didn't.
Well, I mean,
I did just now. I didn't do the voice, though. I didn't do the Mario thing.
So. Well, let's do it.
You need we need a mashup Photoshop job here, Jordy.
It's a me, Mario Bava?
Yeah.
I was talking about this around my 17-year-old, and he was like, I hope you get canceled so I can make fun of you. That'd be really funny if you said something that ticked everybody off enough. So I could tell everybody, my dad's been canceled online. The things teenagers want now.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd brag about that. Like,
no, he just thought it'd be funny. He just wants me to say something and get myself in trouble. Because... we're recording a podcast, talking freely, sometimes drinking freely. Who knows what's going to happen? We'll see.
Maybe we haven't been canceled yet. I don't know.
More than 2 years. We're good. So far.
All right. Nothing new in the Patreon pit because I forgot to put a poll in. but we'll get to it. I know. I failed.
Would you rather be killed by a killer, a ghost, or a Vertilac?
a Vertilac, obviously, and then I get to come back as a Vertilac. Like, it's fucking great.
Those look cool.
I'll be a slotted vampire.
If I could walk around with my own lighting like that, I'd be pretty happy.
I just want Mario Bava to shoot my life and make it look more interesting than it is. Like,
yeah. Well, and in the end, they're all surrounded by family. They all came back together. It was actually kind of beautiful. Good murderous family.
All right. Speaking of murderous family, what dad advice do we have today?
Oh, not about murdering people, at least. I mean,
yeah, don't do that. That's good advice to start with.
But if you do, like, if you find out that when your parents killed somebody, don't fucking snitch. Like, just you got to fucking stand by your family, right? Like,
depends on who they killed.
All right. So, like, if you're
parents, they had a reason. Damn it.
All right, we're all married men, right? If your wife came home. And was like, hey, this person at McDonald's fucked my order up and I killed them. And they're in the trunk right now. What would you do? Like, are you going to turn a man? Or are you going to fucking go grab a shovel like a real man?
Not losing it from McDonald's. Yeah.
Hey, like, I don't know why she killed him, but it was a rough day. That's what put her over the edge, was the fact that like the fucking frosty machine was down and the fries were cold. It's like, that's it. I'm just going to kill this motherfucker. And she did it. So that's not the point. The point is now you're in this situation. Do you stand by their side or do you turn away and run.
I don't know, like Arby's maybe, but like I still.
I do love Arby's. I worked at Arby's in high school.
Okay, I need you guys to answer the question and stop skating around it. Are you going to stand by your spouse? Or are you going to fucking call the cops?
I mean, I answered, like, if it's McDonald's, absolutely not. Oh, like, okay. It's like, all right, kids visit her at every holiday, I guess.
Like, I'll dig the hole, but I'm not going to clean the trunk. She's got to clean the trunk.
Okay, I can respect this. But you're not going to tell the police.
It depends.
Dude.
No, he's definitely calling.
All I know is I'm a ride or die motherfucker, and you don't even have to tell me why you killed them.
We're in this.
Yes,
now.
Jody. You don't even got to tell me. You just have to say there's a dead body in the trunk. I'd already have the shovel be loading the shovels up. To, like,
all right. So what's our cover story? Let's go.
Yeah, we'll figure it out in the drive to the desert. 8 miles out, 6 feet deep. It's 86. 86 that fucking body. So it's nice to know. I hope your significant others listen to this and are like, what the fuck? You wouldn't back me up if I murdered somebody?
Well, now, if you murdered someone and you came to me, then yeah, I'm down.
What if I do it?
Yeah.
Oh, so if I murder someone, you're down. But if your wife does, you're going to turn her in?
I'm turning her in, but I don't know, man.
But are you going to, but when the police come to your door without a search warrant, are you letting them in?
Well, now they don't have a search warrant.
What if they serve it to you in a McDonald's?
Here we go. Dude, I'll fucking kill the cops if I have to. Like I'm ride or die. I'm into this.
We're in. We're in natural born killers territory now.
I don't want to do. I'd be very sad and very upset. Cause I'm an empathetic person. I'd apologize like 75 times while I was doing it. But I fucking do what I have to do.
One apology for every stab.
Yeah, I stood inside of I went to a fucking church to get married. I stood in front of God, who I don't believe in, and gave vows. I'll stand by those fucking vows no matter what happens.
Oh, man. I don't know if something about this has to do with geographic area. You know, like Mondo lives in the desert. So he's like, OK, yeah, this happens a lot out here. We can, you know, take care of it. I live in the south. So there's woods behind my house. You know, like I don't even have to go far. Like I can find a place to bury a body.
Well, you know, I have artificial grass. I don't know how I wouldn't be able to dig a hole.
Well, to be fair, Jason, and this is not a knock on you, but a guy that looks like you, who's like 6'4" and a big guy with a beard, should not be digging a hole anywhere. Like someone will call the cops. You could be planting azaleas, and someone will call the cops on you.
Now that I think Jason about it, though, the geographic thing doesn't really make sense, though, because Joe lives right outside Philly, and one of my favorite stories about Philly is there was this little hitchhiking robot that they made, and the whole point of it was to hitchhike across the United States, and people would put it in their cars and drive it places, and when it got to Philadelphia, they freaking broke the robot into pieces and left its body on the ground. That's a very Philly thing, I think.
It's probably a drunk Eagles fan thinking it was a Cowboys fan. Like that fucking robot silver, like the Cowboys, get him. I don't know why they have a weird accent like that.
He kind of had these boots on, so and gloves.
Yeah, I mean, I live in a suburb, so it'd be like, you know, but I only talk to my neighbors, and my wife parks in the garage. It'd be fine. Like she'd drive in the garage, load the shovels up, we drive away, and no big deal.
I live in the woods. Nobody knows what I get up to out here.
Yeah,
I don't even know. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right, on that note.
A moment of silence. That was nice. I really appreciate that. That really gave us
The dad advice of the week is fucking stand by your loved ones no matter what they do. Actually, it doesn't matter what they do, but you know what I mean.
This is the beginning of Tales from the Crypt episode, you know.
Yeah. How far will a man go?
Yeah, he's the one who gets killed in the end.
For sure, the wife sets him up.
She turns on him. She turns. That's the Tales from the Crypt version.
Yeah.
At the end, you help her bury the body, and then she goes, oh, wait, let's dig one more hole. And then you go down.
The hole wasn't for him, honey. It was for you.
There we go. Yeah. The new Tales from the Crypt that we're coming up with in 10 seconds. That's great.
Well, that wraps up another episode. Joe, thank you for joining us. Where can people find you?
Find us on social media, FFS underscore podcasts, filmsatfirstsight.com. And I guess you could email us if people still do that. Don't email us. I'm not going to tell you the email address.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Cool. Well, again, thank you for coming on and sharing some baba with us. Next week, we'll be covering the Tales from the Crypt episode About Face. We appreciate everyone for listening. We'd really appreciate it if you would give us a rating and review on iTunes, a rating on Spotify. Check out our YouTube channel for videos of these podcasts. And with that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypt.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you axe for. You may get it.